Welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. I'm John, Father John Deere, and today I'm speaking with Bishop Michael Curry. This is a project of www.beatitudecenter.org, where you can find many other podcasts and regular Zoom programs on the nonviolence of Jesus and practicing nonviolence and working for a more just, more nonviolent world. So let's begin with a little prayer, as usual. So I invite everyone just to take a deep breath wherever you are, and together let's just relax for a moment and recenter ourselves. And I invite you to enter into the presence of the God of peace who loves you infinitely and personally and everyone everywhere. And let's welcome the nonviolent Jesus with us and ask for the grace to follow the nonviolent Jesus more faithfully and do God's will. God of peace, thank you for all the blessings of life, love, and peace that you give us. Be with us now as we reflect together on your call to follow the nonviolent Jesus and work for a more nonviolent, more just world. Bless us, inspire us, disarm us, heal us, strengthen us, and send us out to do your will, to do our part, to help end racism, poverty, greed, injustice, war, nuclear weapons, and environmental destruction, and all violence, that we might be your holy beatitude people, your holy peacemakers, and welcome your reign of universal love, nonviolence, and peace on earth. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, friends, it's a great blessing to welcome Bishop Michael Curry, who served as the 27th presiding bishop and primate of the Episcopal Church. He was elected in 2015 to a 9-year term as presiding bishop and retired in 2024 following more than 40 years of ordained ministry. Throughout his ministry, Bishop Michael has been a prophetic leader, particularly in the areas of racial reconciliation, climate change, evangelism, immigration policy, and marriage equality. The animating vision and message of his ministry, as he says, is Jesus of Nazareth and his way of radical sacrificial love and the call to be part of the Jesus movement, and I'm all for it. So Bishop Curry was ordained an Episcopal priest in 1978 and served in parishes in North Carolina, Ohio, and Maryland. He's a graduate from Hobart and William Smith Colleges and earned his Master of Divinity degree from Yale. Bishop Curry is the author of 5 books, especially his great book, Love is the Way, along with The Power of Love, Crazy Christians, and Following the Way of Jesus. And you'll see him regularly on national and international media outlets. Bishop Michael captured the world's attention when he preached at Harry and Meghan's wedding at Westminster Abbey and called the whole world to love. He comes to us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Bishop Michael Curry, welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Father John. Thank you for having me. It's just great. Great to be with you.
Well, let's begin by talking about Jesus. And
yes,
you continuously speak about Jesus and his way of sacrificial mm-hmm. love. It seems mm-hmm. to be, I'm so happy to hear, the theme of your whole life. Tell me about it, Bishop. Mm-hmm. I need to hear the good news.
Oh, I'm with you. I need to hear it, too. We all need to hear it. I can tell you, I really have, that's grown on me. I mean, and I have to admit, grown over the years of my ordained ministry, in particular, beginning to realize that a Christianity that doesn't take the way of Jesus and his way of radical unconditional love, his way of nonviolent living, his way of reflecting the image of God that is in us, that Christianity without that always goes wrong. Always. It has historically. It has veered off into all sorts of troubled ways and has moved away from The Jesus we have in the Beatitudes, the Jesus we have in the Sermon on the Mount, the Jesus we have in I can go on and on, Matthew 25, the Jesus who makes the way of unselfish sacrificial love, which is the way of God, the way of life, and declares that is the supreme law of God. When I just love that. Especially in Matthew, where the lawyer comes up, you know, the scribes. And every time you see the word scribes, I tell folk it means lawyers. And you know, scribe.
It's not good.
And I love to ask. Oh yeah, I love to ask any lawyers in the house today, or any lawyers who will admit it in the house. But you know, living the talking about that, really kind of everybody kind of really says that's where he talked about love. I said, well, in Matthew's gospel, that's exactly where he talks about love. When the lawyer asked him, you know, what is the greatest law in the entire legal codes of Moses? And Jesus reaches back and both to Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy 6 and to Leviticus. And says, you know, the greatest law is in the Shema, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Jesus says this is the first and great commandment. And then he said the second is like unto it. And he goes to Leviticus 19 and he says, the second is like unto it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And then he says on these two, love of God, love of neighbor, hang all the law. In the prophets, everything that God's been trying to say in the Hebrew scriptures and even in the Christian New Testament, everything that Jesus was about, everything, not nothing excluded, everything on these two hang all the law and the prophets. That way of love is the way of God, and it is the key to religious faith. It is the key to a life lived in the way of the God who the Bible also says is love. And so it took me a while to get there, to realize that really is true. And if that's true, then a whole host of behaviors and ways for me as a follower of Jesus, and for us as followers of Jesus, and for us as a human family of I just believe any religion or type or way, it's the key to being human and humane, and the key to finding life for us all. I mean, you didn't ask for all these Bible verses, but if you look in Luke, another lawyer, where Jesus eventually tells the parable of the Good Samaritan, and in that one, Jesus has the lawyer say, okay, you want to know what the key to life is? What did Moses say? And the lawyer goes back to Deuteronomy 6 and Leviticus 19 and says, love God, love your neighbor. And then Jesus says to him, do this and find life. The key to life is God's way of love. It is the way. It's the truth. It's the life. And that's what Jesus embodied and came to show us. And all of his teachings, everything. I actually
that's
quoted
great.
One time, who was it? Billy Holiday, but it was Duke Ellington's song. One of his songs says, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. And
that's
religion
so
don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. It's all about love.
Well, as you know, so I've been spending my whole life trying to explore and promote and teach that Jesus was totally nonviolent, which is what I get from
yes.
Gandhi and Martin Luther King. And Dr. Mm-hmm. King, you know, whom I've studied like you, and, you know, he just says such brilliant things, but the word love has been so co-opted, so is the word peace.
Yes.
And so he spent hours laboring with audiences saying, okay, it's agape. When I was with Coretta Scott King, that's what she talked about always.
Yes.
So I want to ask you about Jesus and nonviolence, and thank you for the great endorsement of my big commentary book on the Gospels, The Gospel of Peace. Tell me your thoughts on, particularly, so like on this Gandhian Kingian perspective on Jesus as totally nonviolent and what that means for us as Christians and who want to be people of universal love.
Absolutely. You've been... to be honest, one of the most prolific and consistent advocates in our time. You really have been. And it's the impact will be seen down the corridors of history. If we learn the ways of true peace and justice and compassion and nonviolence, if we learn those, we will find life, because those are the ways of love. But it really is critical. I mean, Dr. King, one of his earliest sermons, I guess, would be, go back to the 50s, where he did unpack at least three of the Greek words for love. Right. There actually are a couple more.
Right.
But at least, you know, eros, agape, and philia, and all that. And it helps to unpack those. And all three of which are used in the scriptures. Eros is used most frequently, you know, in the Song of Songs, which is love poetry between a bride and a bridegroom. So it makes sense. Eros, you know, the way of love that is romance. And philia is used with some great frequency of friendship, of that kind of love that's not romantic, but actually is almost kinship, friendship. I mean, David and Jonathan in the Old Testament would be an example of philia, of love between deep friends, which, I mean, I have a friend I met in kindergarten. I mean, we met in kindergarten, and we joke about, you know, getting a little thing of milk and one graham cracker. And we joke and say, all we got was one graham cracker. We were little boys. We wanted, can we have another one? I mean, but our friendship goes back that long. I mean, we've been like brothers since then. But agape is the one, certainly in the New Testament, but not just in the New Testament, but agape is the word, the Greek word that's translated most frequently on the lips of Jesus in the writings of Paul and the other apostolic writings. And that agape is the kind of love that Dr. King and Gandhi and what you have been teaching us about, that's the way of love that is unselfish, that is sacrificial, that seeks the good and the well-being of the other, as well as the self, but of the other first, that it is that kind of love that John 3:16, for example, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. He didn't take, he gave freely. That's that kind of love requires discipline. It requires training. It requires the kind of reinforcement or nurturing that allows that kind of love to blossom and my selfish self not to blossom and not to control.
What do you think? Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Father.
You think of this then? So Martin is telling us, well, when Jesus is saying all that, it means you can't hurt people. You can't be violent.
Yes.
And you can't kill people. And by the way, I mean, we're all for love. Don't get me wrong, but building nuclear weapons and dropping bombs. And so that's why I keep insisting that it has to be nonviolent love. You don't.
Yes.
There is no harm involved. You agree?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I agree completely. And if you look even at the passages about love, for example, in the Gospels, the passages about love cluster around Jesus being willing and ready to sacrifice his own life for the good and well-being of others.
Yeah.
That's where they, I mean, if you look at them, they really do cluster with a few exceptions. John 3:16 would be an exception. Love your enemies in the Sermon on the Mount would be another. But all of the rest of them, the love passages in John 13 through 17 at the Last Supper, I give you a new commandment that you love one another. That's at the Last Supper.
And love as I have loved you, lay down my life, love.
Exactly. Shocking. And that's there. And so that's telling us that that nonviolent way, which is the way that Jesus clearly chose when his destiny laid itself before him, he told Peter, Then Peter took out that sword, put your sword back in its sheath. Put it back. That's not our way. I mean, he's clear that the love passages emerge most profoundly during Holy Week and refer to the cross. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in the book he never finished, at least writing, he finished it with his life, but it was eventually titled Ethics, says that love is always cruciform. It is the nonviolent, non-harmful way that transforms everything and can actually transform both our lives and the life of our societies and the life of the world. It is the nonviolent way. And, you know, again, Bonhoeffer didn't finish the book. He finished it with his life.
So there you were.
He gave his life.
Bishop, you're in Westminster Abbey, and the whole world is listening to you, and you're preaching at Harry and Meghan's wedding, and you're going on and on about love. And you then start this whole beautiful litany, which I had to go and listen to, and I remember that, and read it. When love is the way, then no child will go to bed hungry. When love is the way, swords will be beaten into plowshares and they will study war no more. And you went on and on. And then you wrote a beautiful best-selling book, Love is the Way, which, gosh, it needs to be in every church. So I was wondering, and you like to speak about love as a transformative power. Tell me more about then that, what I heard you leading to, even at that wedding sermon, is the social, economic, and political implications of universal love. Tell me about that.
Yes. The thing is, love is not a sentiment. This kind of agape is not a, that's where it's helpful. It's not a sentiment. It is a commitment. I sometimes, in sermons, I have, at least when I would be preaching around the Episcopal Church, I often tell folk, you can turn on the soap operas and you'll hear the word love all the time. But the love that's usually being talked about is not what the New Testament is talking about, for the most part. It's certainly not what John 3:16, God so loved the world that he gave his only son. That's not what he's talking about. It's not the love that Jesus is talking about as he begins the way of the passion of taking up his cross to give his life for others, not for himself. And it is that kind of love that is transformative. Paul, actually, in 1 Corinthians 13, is talking about agape. Love is not jealous. It is not rude. It is not boastful. It is does not insist on its own way, and on and on. He's describing the way of nonviolence there. You know, he's talking about in a community that's destroying itself on selfishness. The Corinthian church was the most dysfunctional church in the history of Christianity, I suspect. I mean, they were killing each other. People were dividing into factions. The rich were getting their communion before the poor. They were mistreating each other. Men were abusing women. I mean, this is like, this community was a nightmare. I mean, if people actually read 1 Corinthians from beginning to end, you realize Paul, that's what Paul was dealing with. And he finally stops and says, you can be as religious as you want, but if you don't have the kind of love that is unselfish, that really is committed to the being and welfare of the other, of other people, and not just yourself, then you it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
That's
what he was talking about.
That's great.
And that's, would that our Congress had that kind of, that way.
All of us. I really like that you have been calling all Episcopalians and all of us to what you call the Jesus movement. Because as you know me, Bishop, I've always seen Jesus as a movement organizer, like Gandhi and Dr. King. And it's right there in the Gospel of Luke. He's doing all this great work, and then I always joke, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Jesus thinks he's Martin Luther King. He sends 72 disciples ahead of him in prayers. That's just classic labor movement organizing. You're lambs into lambs into the midst of the wolves, and he gives them assignment, expel demons, heal everybody, proclaim God's reign. And I think We want everything but that. Because that means getting up off the couch, leaving the comfort of the church and getting out into the world. But that's what Jesus is looking for today, you know, joining a movement to end racism, war, poverty, greed, fascism, gun violence, nuclear weapons, environmental destruction, and all of that. Mm-hmm. And it's a grassroots movement of nonviolence. And, you know, Bishop, as I ask you about all this, I'm, you know, what I've been seeing over the last few years is, again, bless me for I have sinned. I don't call people to the church. Martin Luther King defined the church as the place you go from. I call people to join the movement. And
join
need to go way beyond Dr. King because we're on the brink of destroying the planet. We need a global grassroots people power movement of nonviolence. And what do you mean when you say join the Jesus movement?
That's exactly what I know that biblical scholars, have used that phrase, the Jesus movement, to talk about sort of the early forms of Christianity. I love that passage in, Albert Nolan's book, Jesus Before Christianity, where he says, Jesus didn't found an institution. He called forth a movement. It's so true. He organized the movement. It's classic community organizing. I took the training and I said, wow, this sounds like Jesus. I remember the first time I took it. Where was I? I guess I was in Baltimore then. But I remember thinking these means of organizing sure do sound like Jesus. Palm Sunday actually sounds like a movement's activity. It sounds like
it's a street theater. It's march.
It was street. You got it. That's what's going on. And the people responded. And so did the powers eventually, once they were able to get the hands on him. But the people responded. I find it fascinating that all of the trials of Jesus before he's crucified, all that stuff happens at night when the people weren't around.
Yeah.
That's not an accident.
No.
That's when the powers do their, that's when the powers of darkness come out then. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on. Anyway, and so I really do think that we're talking about a movement of God in the world. That's what Jesus was getting at. God's got, it's a movement of God. That's what Jesus was, and that movement is bigger even than all of our religions put together. It is bigger because the way Jesus was talking about, when he finally said to Pilate, my kingdom is not of this world. If it was, my followers would take up sword and God knows what they would do. No, my kingdom is bigger than that. It is the reign of God. It is the reign of the God who the Bible eventually says is love. And if that's who and what God is, then real life is to be found in that way. And in real life, when that kind of love, as you quoted, that kind of love rules and reigns and becomes the kingdom of this world, then no child goes to bed hungry. Then injustice is now past history. Then the good will rule. Then the loving will rule. Then the compassionate will rule. Then laws will be just. Then we will fight. Then the wolf will lie down with the lamb and they will not hurt and destroy in all God's holy mountain. This is not airy fairy stuff. This is the hard head of stuff of God's reign. What happens when thy kingdom come, thy will be done, not just in heaven, but on earth.
So here we are, Bishop, in this terrible moment in our country, in our world, when after all the great good you've done with the Trump administration, the Republican Party, and even the news as we speak today, getting rid of voting rights, but of course civil rights, all programs for the poor at home and abroad, and basically setting up full-on white supremacy, fascism, authoritarianism, permanent warfare, racing toward nuclear destruction, environmental destruction.
Yeah.
So we're all going through this. What's your thought on what's happening? And You've been saying it all along, but what would you like Christians across the U.S. to do in response to this dark night that we're going through?
To become part of God's movement in the world, not just in the church, but as the church, following in the footsteps, no, as the body of Christ, as the people of God, following Jesus Christ in the world on our Palm Sundays while Pontius Pilate is marching in from the other side of town. And that means participating. I went to the first No Kings. I didn't get to the second one. But I realized the one thing that that did, among others, it reminded us that there's more good among us than the other. 7 million people came out of that first one.
Mm-hmm.
7 million, which tells me that if we can appeal to the sensible center, the average folk who basically are trying to live good and decent lives, if we can get them to call up, these are our values, these are our virtues, this is where we stand. We don't mistreat immigrants. We have a Statue of Liberty in the New York Harbor, and that woman has got that torch. Give me your tired, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. That's your wretched refuse. We don't mistreat folk who are immigrants. That's America opens her arms, opens her door. I mean, we don't misuse military power to conquer other people, to beat them down. If we do what is necessary to establish peace, to enable justice, to make societies not just human but humane. That's who we are. And when we do that, we are aligning ourselves with the goodness of God, who made the world and saw what he had created and said, this is pretty good.
Tell me about what has sustained you, Bishop, in your life long ministry, and what tips do you have for the rest of us to stay at it on the Christian journey for the long haul to the last day, not to give up?
Yes, sir.
Or bury our heads in the sand and say, oh, nothing can be done, give in to despair. What tips do you have for us all?
Well, I tell you, I mean, we all have our days.
Yeah.
And we just do. That's human. We're human, and we get weary. Like the old slaves, you say, we get weary. And one of the spirituals of enslaved folk in this country said, walk together, children, and don't you get weary, because there's a great camp meeting in the promised land.
Oh, that's great.
There's a great camp meeting. God's going to have God's day. But you got to walk together. In other words, we need each other for the journey. Walk together, children. And that's the key. Don't get weary. Hold each other up. When you're weak, I'll lift you up. When I'm weak, you lift me up. We walk together, children, and don't you get weary. And I'm very aware that walking together, walking the Emmaus Road, you know, like those folk in the gospel story, that walking together, following him on the Via Dolorosa and the way of suffering, and you can't do it alone. None of us can. And not being deceived that this struggle is going to be quick. That great book about the life of Nelson Mandela is called A Long Walk to Freedom.
Yeah.
And understanding that this is a long distance walk. Isaiah got that word. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up on wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary, but they shall walk and not faint.
Very good.
It's a long walk to freedom. And so we need each other. And so we have to find, I mean, that's really kind of what church is about. Now, I know it doesn't always live up to that, but when we can find community, kind Christian community, we can support each other in the struggle. And because you can't do it alone. With that Broadway play, your arms are too short to box with God. You can't do it alone, you know? And that's, I have to admit, it was hard during the pandemic when we really were separated from each other for good reason. I mean, it was necessary to save us. But boy, it was hard. Most of us weren't meant to be hermits.
So,
and
Bishop,
we're not at our best.
You're now retired, yeah, and you're facing some health issues. Tell us what you're learning about in this new chapter of your life, and we have to begin to wrap it up soon.
Sure. I tell you what I've had. One thing I've learned is there is wisdom in Sabbath.
Uh-huh.
There really is, and I decided that I'm going to stop and kind of slow up when I retire. Stop, slow up, and then think and pray, and then see, okay, Lord, now what's next? What do I do now? Because I'm not, like my daddy used to say, Lord didn't put you here just to consume oxygen. So what do you want me to do next? And how do I serve now? I don't need to be in charge of anything. I don't need to be famous. I don't need to be rich. I want to make sure I have food to eat. But I mean, beyond that, I don't need, you know, I'm at the point in my life, I don't need a lot. I'm grateful for whatever health I have. I've had enough sickness. Other folk have even worse. But I mean, you know, I was still in the middle of my term as presiding bishop, or in the last couple of years. And all of a sudden, I found myself in the hospital, and went in for one thing, and was going to have surgery on that. But while I was in for that, they found cardiac issues, and so they had to. So I have my pacemaker now, and I go to the cardiologist every, you know, 6 months or something like that. I get checked, and we're keeping the blood pressure down, and, you know, trying to watch an aneurysm that's there in the heart cavity and trying to manage all that stuff. And then I had neurological issues, and they had to go in, and I think they called it coiling, where they found an aneurysm in the brain, and they inject these coils in there that take over the aneurysm and cause the blood to find a new way, a new flow. And all I can say is, prayer and good medicine is a good football team.
There you go. Oh, you're doing great, man, and many, many more years to you. Would you have any last message or word of encouragement to all the many listeners today?
Absolutely. You know what it would be?
What?
It would go back to that word, that old Negro spiritual of enslaved folk for whom the road to freedom was long and hard and almost difficult to even see. And they sang Walk Together Children and Don't You Get Weary, because there's a great camp meeting in the Promised Land.
There you go. Well, thank you so much, Bishop Michael Curry, for speaking with me today.
Father,
it's a blessing.
And you are a blessing, and thank you for all you do. My God, you've been feeding and nurturing me as well as many other people for years.
Well, thank you, Michael. And thank you, friends, for listening to the Nonviolent Jesus podcast. You can hear more podcasts and find other upcoming Zoom programs at beatitudecenter.org and sign up to receive our free e-blast with news about upcoming podcasts and Zooms. And please tell your friends and coworkers about this podcast. And I hope you will all get my new book, Universal Love, Surrendering to the God of Peace. If you're on Substack, look for me at Father John Deere. And may the God of peace bless you all. Keep on following the nonviolent Jesus and resisting racism, war, fascism, injustice, and working for a more just, more nonviolent country and world. See you next time. Thanks so much.